Well, the Central Wasatch Commission is hosting a public meeting and forum in Park City tomorrow night to take comments on the proposed Wasatch National Conservation and Recreation Area Act to be considered by Congress. In the studio, as I mentioned, Executive Director Ralph Becker, along with Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson and Communications Director Lindsay Nielsen. Good morning to all of you.
Thank you. Good morning.
So I had a look at the maps that you guys have published. Nothing in those maps showing anything happening here in Summit or Wasatch County. So why is a meeting being held in Park City when it doesn't even appear Park City is even involved? Do you want to start with that, Ralph? Or?
Sure. Well, really, there are probably two primary reasons. The Central Wasatch Commission is a regional governmental entity to look out for the Wasatch Mountains, including both the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch Back. Chris Robinson here represents Summit County. Mayor Bierman represents Park City. And there are actually, there is also one element of the legislation that that I think has been expressed of real importance to Park City and Summit County. There's a piece of federal land, Forest Service land, the monitors area, that would be protected as forest land and limited in terms of any future development. So it's currently used heavily for dispersed recreation purposes, and this would assure that continues. Yeah.
We certainly have seen some of that swapping happening on the other side with private ownership by Brighton and Snowbird trying to be swapped out for land in Wasatch County. So if this land in the monitors is protected, what's the swap for that, or is there none?
There isn't. This is, Chris can speak to this. He knows the area as I do, but this is an area I think that is prized for current non-developed uses, and the importance is to keep that in that condition. So it's Forest Service land. There would be no land trades involved with it. All of the land trades that are being proposed and considered at this point are all on the Salt Lake side and involve ski areas that have some mountainside properties outside of their ski areas that would be swapped for some of their base area lands that are a mix of public and private ownership.
Okay, so how would this change then, Chris? I mean, it's U.S. Forest Service land. It would be U.S. Forest Service land, or what's the difference?
Well, it would be subject to the protections of the NCRA. Right now, it's Forest Service land. There's about 975 acres. And it's, the Forest Service drew its boundary following section lines and stuff, and the county line follows ridge lines. And so there's this strip of land that's above Park City Mountain Resort. And it could be, and there's a general plan in the Forest Service lingo that prevents it from being expanded into by the resort. But this would add another layer of protection. And I can remember very well several years ago when we were involved with the Mountain Accord, of which this is the successor, that the public was very excited to see that we were adding additional protections to this very favored backcountry area.
Yeah, so what does that mean, though, for it to be protected?
Well, it means it's
compared to what it is. I mean,
it would require an act of Congress to change its protection. Right now, a forest plan could be changed through lobbying and general persuasion. Right now, the plans say there won't be any expansion into it, but the goal and one of my goals of this piece of legislation is to ensure that that stays in as protected within the designation.
So what you're saying is that this would prevent, say, Park City Mountain Resort from ever lobbying Congress from asking it to include it in its boundaries, just like we see Forest Service land and some of the other big and little Cottonwood Canyon.
It wouldn't prevent anyone from lobbying the Congress to change it, but that's a heavy lift to enact legislation at the congressional level. So it's just Congress can do whatever it wants, right? So it's just an added protection.
Okay. More so than it would be.
Plain vanilla Forest Service land is subject to the rules and regulations and plans of the Forest Service.
All right. So this is really what you want to hear about then from folks tomorrow?
No, I think this area it's an important sidebar conversation for the NCRA, but the bigger conversation is that this is we're on the backside of a very important watershed. It's ecologically and environmentally important. It's recreationally important. And this legislation affects, the whole region. And so we don't want to just focus in our meeting here tomorrow night on just this piece of land, but also on the nuts and bolts of the legislation. And there's also some of the hot button issues, as you know, from having covered this issue for many years now, are the transportation connections. One of the reasons I think that Summit County and Park City have been very interested in it is wanting to make sure we have a seat at a table on efforts to maybe improve Guardsman's Pass Road into Brighton or into Big Cottonwood Canyon, and these other issues of connectivity that are, not to mention the watershed issues that affect Park City using mine waters that are really owned by Salt Lake City Public Utilities and that originate over there.
Yeah. I'm going to talk a little bit more about transportation, but of course you know that there's been some public pushback just in terms of the annual financial commitments that Park City and Summit County are making. Park City to the tune of $100,000 a year, Summit County to the tune of $50,000 a year, which really means for those living within the municipality of Park City, it's about $125,000 that's coming out of that tax fund. Is that what this is about, just because we have the seat at a table that you need to be here to kind of show us what you're doing, Ralph?
No, I think this is much more a function of the realization that I think a lot of us came to over the last decade or so, that these mountains are a regional resource for all of us. Whether you think of it economically or the transportation issues are now interwoven, the watershed issues are tied together. A lot of the water from Park City actually comes from the other side of the mountain and comes out through mine tunnels over here. And so I think it's much more a function of we are now a region. 30 years ago, you could say, well, the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch Back, as it relates to these mountains, are separated. Today, that's not true. People from Park City recreate over on the Salt Lake side, and people from the Salt Lake side recreate over on the Summit County and in the Wasatch County side. And so we're all tied together, and the mountains are a resource regionally. So from the beginning, I think, really going back to the beginning of Mountain Accord, the belief and the intention was we should be thinking and operating and working together as a region when it comes to these mountains. And so we're having a meeting this evening on the Salt Lake side, and tomorrow evening we're having one over here. And it's really to make sure we get input from everybody who's interested.
Yeah.
May I say one more thing, Leslie? You mentioned the $100,000 and the $50,000 that had previously been paid by Summit County and Park City and Summit County respectively as sort of an annual fee. We are working hard to try to really understand the value proposition for each of the members of the Central Wasatch. Some have, that are in ground zero, say Alta, the town of Alta has a small footprint, but big dog in the fight. Salt Lake City Public Utilities has a great importance because of its extraterritorial jurisdiction in the Cottonwood Canyons. We're trying to figure out a model forward that isn't, that Summit County and Park City would be paying an amount that is commensurate with the value that it gets out of it. But we do believe that there is value there, and figuring out that balance going forward is one of our challenges.
Let's talk a little bit about the transportation connections, because, again, that was a big part of that. I mean, and this was, I believe, before your time, Ralph. And
his time starts as mayor of Salt Lake City. He was the one that started this from the beginning.
Okay, well, then you were one of those on Mountain Accord that went on some of those expensive European vacations to Switzerland, where we went specifically to look at those connection issues, and where we saw tunnels and tramways and all of, so the no car kind of feeling like. Where do we stand with that? Because the last time we got an update, I believe, at the county council level, the word tunnel was mentioned, and the county council...
That was unfortunate, because that's not what we've been talking about at all. But
Yeah. Right. And so is the word tunnel now all gone away forever?
I think we've outlawed it from the vocabulary. No,
I'm just wondering, though. I mean, we went to Switzerland to look at how it's done in the mountains, and they've done a very successful job of limiting cars and making people take trains and such. So are we kind of cutting ourselves off at the knees here by saying
I think that, you know, the trip you mentioned where they went to Switzerland to look at different rail and cog rail methodologies, those are not limited to just having a tunnel. But my perspective, as having been on this for a long time, is that initially there were some kind of grandiose ideas that would cost billions of dollars to implement that reality has sort of set in. This is the way I see it, and that the solutions to the transportation problems in the Cottonwood Canyons in the near term are going to be much more simple and much less expensive. And someday there may be some kind of a rail that goes up the Cottonwood Canyons. Whether it involves any tunnels, you know, that's yet to be seen. But I think that the solutions today are much more cost-effective and simple in terms of other mass transit, and Ralph is better equipped to talk about that. I don't like is that we get off on a rabbit hole of all of a sudden the tunnels have come back, and it just totally sucks the air out of the room.
Let's talk a little bit then about what's being proposed with these more simple, less expensive routes up the Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon. And of course, you're aware of just the great winter we had. And the traffic, I mean, where people sat to come down at the end of a ski day, 3-4 hours.
Or longer, yeah. Well, just building a little bit on Chris's point, during the Mountain Accord process, there were two primary focuses. One was on how do we secure the long-term use and protection of these mountains in a way that people want. And that involved a number of things that have largely reflected in this legislation, congressional legislation that's being proposed and considered and is the primary subject of the meeting for tomorrow night. But the other focus that a lot of people brought to it as the primary focus was how do we solve these transportation issues that were getting increasingly worse? But the idea of connecting all of these areas, front and back of the Wasatch, go back 30, 40 years, there was an interconnect proposal, and then there was a Wasatch One proposal. There are all of these different proposals out there. During the Mountain Accord process, and now in much more detail and carefully, those options were narrowed down. So Park City and Summit County during that process came to the conclusion, it's like, we do not want to even be considering at this point a connection to Park City and Summit County from Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons. So that was removed as any kind of a proposal even during that process, as was Guardsman's Pass. It was very clear that trying to make Guardsman's Pass a year-round road with the impacts here in Park City was simply not going to be functional or preferable or desirable. So some things were taken off the table during the Mountain Accord process, and what is happening now is there is a focus on Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons and what are the short and medium and long-term solutions that will best relieve that congestion you're talking about, people waiting hours and hours to get up and down the canyons at the beginning and end of the day, and make it safer. Because Little Cottonwood Canyon is the number one avalanche-prone canyon road in the world. And so the legislature appropriated some money to look at Little Cottonwood Canyon. And UDOT is now going through an environmental impact statement for Little Cottonwood Canyon. And then as those issues have evolved, they've realized just like, you can't just look at Little Cottonwood Canyon. You have to also consider Big Cottonwood Canyon in a more limited respect, so decisions you make are tied together. But the idea of sort of tying and how, if ever, there would be a connection between the Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County areas of the mountains and the Summit County and Park City areas are for now off the table. They're not being considered as part of the studies going forward. And maybe at some point in the future they could be, but it's just not. They were really, I'd say, started to be eliminated during the Mountain Accord process, and it's not the focus of transportation solutions today.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that special interests might not try to throw them back on the table. I mean, and that's what we see, you know, the meeting that you referenced where we had an update from CWC at the county council, there had been some special interests saying, oh, well, they want to dictate the agenda sometimes.
Those advocates going back to the days of Interconnect, which are 30-plus years old, are still here, who see great opportunity and benefit associated with an interconnected transportation system over or through the mountains, however it might occur, from the Wasatch Front to the Wasatch Back. And those voices continue in a very strong way today. And they're not going to go away, as Chris said.
They're with us.
So real quick then, so the answer then for Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon then is to build parking lots so that people are required then now to take mass transit up?
Well,
is that the idea?
There aren't proposals today because it hasn't reached that point of the process. But we're in a two-year process where we're looking at what are the best transportation solutions today. And some of them are pretty simple things that could make a big difference. What are the transit improvements that can be made so that it is actually easier and better for people to use buses today than to drive their car, to reduce single occupancy vehicle use, which then reduces the number of vehicles going up and down the canyons. What can be done to improve the traffic flow at intersections or some places having better merge lanes or better left-hand turns? So there's a series of considerations that are being put on the table. And as I said, some of them actually you'll see going into place in this next year. Some of it is just communications. People need to know if they're heading over there what to expect in terms of delays on those great powder days, delays to be able to get up and down the canyon. So they know, okay, there's going to be a two-hour delay because they've closed the canyon for avalanche control or there's been an accident in the canyon. People can adjust their transportation accordingly.
So again, tomorrow's hearing really about our public forum about the legislation, and we're talking about legislation that was, I believe, redrafted about a year ago. And is it at this point even ready for congressional action, or you still have several steps?
Well, it's getting close to ready. Obviously, our congressional delegation members will decide the time they feel it's ready for introduction of legislation, but what we've been doing for the last year is starting with legislation that was introduced by Congressman Chaffetz when he represented this area in 2016, is to bring forward what are the issues associated with this legislation, how can the legislation be improved, and this is actually the fourth round of possible congressional legislation that we've been refining time and time again now. And we want to get the public input on this most recent version of the legislation so that when the time comes for legislation to be introduced in Congress, we are as well prepared locally, because this is really a locally driven effort. We're as well prepared locally for a piece of consensus legislation.
Yeah, so Congressman Chaffetz, of course, gone. So who's the sponsor of it now?
Well, we'll see. They all have expressed a lot of interest. When Congressman Chaffetz left, it was passed on to Representative Love. She, of course, has now left Congress. This area is represented by Congressman Curtis. He's shown great interest and been paying a lot of attention to the bill. But the delegation members talk among themselves, and they can decide, I guess, how best to proceed.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it doesn't get introduced this session, I mean, does it then get held over until next year again and then have to be totally reintroduced? Or
no, Congress operates on two-year cycles. So we're in the first year of a two-year cycle for Congress. And so anything that's introduced in these 2 years would be considered in this Congress. Last year, there was an effort to try to pull together at the very end of the Congress this legislation. There simply wasn't enough time. So we've been taking the time, the Central Wasatch Commission has been taking the time to really continue to massage the legislation, consider changes. It's been back in D.C. for review with Congressional Drafting Services. And actually, most of the changes that we see in this draft reflect reorganization and technical changes to meet drafting desires in terms of the way Congress likes to look at provisions today and the organization of legislation like this.
Okay. I mean, what's so difficult about it, though? I mean, it's like if everybody wants it, why can't they just, you know, say aye?
Well, there's some people who would suggest that, but there are great passions that we all hold for these mountains, and people have very strongly held opinions about what should and shouldn't be done, and we're doing our best to listen to those opinions, to sort out what would help improve the legislation, and to get it in the best possible form. So there are people who said, well, just leave it to our congressional delegation and let them carry it, which is what often happens in legislation. This effort has been so driven by the local desires, going back to the Mountain Accord days, of everybody getting involved, whether it's the local jurisdictions, the state, the ski areas, the conservation groups. The Central Wasatch Commission has wanted to continue in that vein and have this be a locally preferred piece of legislation that is then introduced in Congress.
Okay. Lindsay, I want to bring you in it real quick. If there is the drafted legislation online that people can find out more about it.
Yeah. Yes.
Just what is it?
It's online.
What's the website?
cwc.utah.gov.
Okay. And then in terms of tomorrow's hearing, 6 o'clock, Park City High School in the large lecture hall area, is that where it's going to be?
It's in the cafeteria.
In the cafeteria.
Yes.
So any opportunity if somebody can't make it then? Are you going to Facebook Live it or anything that people can at least maybe watch it? Or?
So it won't be Facebook Live, but we are in the middle of a 30-day comment period. There are a number of ways that folks can submit comments on this bill. You can submit via email to comments@cwc.utah.gov. You can submit comments through the CWC website, which I just gave you, or in person at a number of these comment forums, which we have scheduled tonight. There's one 4 to 6 down in Cottonwood Heights tomorrow night. There's one here in Park City at the Park City High School, 6 to 8 p.m. in the cafeteria. And then our third comment forum is taking place on September 18th, also down in the Salt Lake Valley. And then the comment period formally ends on the 19th of September.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to add real quickly before I move
on?
No,
appreciate your attention to this. Look forward to people's input.
Okay. Thanks for your
time.
Thanks,
Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, 30 or so members of the Leadership Class 25 spent the last 5 days on the annual City Road Tour. In the studio, I have three of those who participated, Emily Quinn Laughlin, Greg Simmons, and Enrique Sanchez. Good morning to all of you.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So, Emily, you are, your title was a gallery associate. You work on Main Street?
Yes. So, since starting the leadership class, I have worked for Susan Swartz Studios as well as Rooted. I'm now working for the Arts Council, running a new shared artist studio space on Main.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have to talk to you more about that later. Greg, you are a rancher and land assessor?
I do. Yes, I've been involved in ranching for 50 years and also have a remote sensing business that looks at the Earth from outer space to identify its kind of vital signs, so to speak, like how's its blood pressure and heart rate, et cetera.
Okay. And Junior, Enrique, you are now official or an employee of Park City Municipal working in the police department?
Yes, correct. Yeah, so I've got kind of a two-hat thing going on here with the city. I work with the police department as well as City Hall in a community outreach kind of position to kind of help with the social equity.
Okay. If we can we just kind of go down the line? I'm starting with you, Greg. You know, you guys all visited Crested Butte and Montrose, Colorado. For you, Greg, what was the most interesting during the tour?
I guess the most interesting thing to me was that even though it was a mountain town, ski town, its geography was a lot different because of the public land. And it was real mountains, Rocky Mountain, high mountains. And the town was basically taken over by a bunch of hippies, including Miles in the 1970s. And and since it's a cherry stem back into nowhere, real estate appreciation didn't hit it as hard and fast as post-Olympics that it did to us.
Yeah. And how about you? For you?
I'd agree with him. It was crazy to think how Aspen was literally right there. but it still takes 4 hours. There's one road in and one road out to Crested Butte, and it takes 4 hours to get to Aspen, even though it was right across the mountain, like the big Cottonwood and the little Cottonwood are to us.
Mm-hmm. And then for you, Emily, what was kind of your takeaway with or most interesting to about Crested Butte?
I thought it was really interesting to observe a similar mountain town to Park City in some ways, but how sort of learning about that town, what it taught me was the way the larger governments are functioning within each state and how that affects the city and its development. So Crested Butte has home rule in Colorado and a little bit more freedom to govern itself, whereas here I just learned sort of a little bit more about the structure of our organization in Utah, and it's a little bit more, we have a little bit more responsibility to the state legislature in terms of our governing of our little town here in Park City.
So. Yeah. So, of course, your class project was about wildfire prevention. Anything that you learned about what they're doing there in Colorado that could have helped you here?
Well, I know they're definitely working on clear-cutting some of their forests. They haven't had a wildfire since the late 1800s, so they have quite a bit more even wildlands surrounding them that could burn, and so they're trying to be proactive about, you know, setting up boundaries and making sure they're safe.
The interesting fact about their Crested Butte area, the Gunnison Valley, is that they have 83% open space that's federally owned, so it's kind of a little bit less of a challenge for them since it's federally owned and it's federally operated compared to us where we have to actually purchase open space and keep it open space.
Yeah. Any reflections from you, Greg?
Yeah, I think the federal ownership and the primitive area and how high it is a little less susceptible because of, and it's also faces east and therefore, it's going to be colder longer and therefore greener. It's just lost its wildflowers. But the other thing is that the pine beetle has not really started affecting it yet, although there's hints of that. And so I'm sure they're alerted to the coming threat.
Yeah. Let's kind of walk back again. And then, I mean, you spend some time debriefing, I think, yesterday when you got back. Anything that kind of that gelled or clarified for you about the 5 days, Emily? That it's like, oh, this is something that, you know, as a new graduate of Park City Leadership that, you know, you would want to get involved in? Or
yeah, well, I definitely really admired the way that they have put a lot of money in as just a very small town into their incredible art center. I mean, it's state of the art, you know, the just what we were learning about the acoustics and the different things they used to build it was amazing, and they had also a partner space on their main street where they have an artist in residence. So when we're looking at the new arts district and ways of, you know, creating spaces that function for the community, I think they, even though they're smaller than us, are definitely, you know, showing us some great leadership in that area.
Yeah. How about for you, Enrique? Anything that kind of clarified?
Yeah. So a lot. This is actually my second city tour. I was part of it last year for my leadership class. And I kind of came in with a little bit of a different scope for my work purposes now. But yeah, it's great to kind of see how we're a very similar mountain town. We both have mountains in our the bases right here in our town. And we have very similar problems. I spoke to the Gunnison city manager, and he told me that the number one issue for the immigrant population was housing, which is something that we've identified here in Park City. So I think that my biggest takeaway is that even though we're you know, in different states, we have similar geography, and obviously we have similar problems, so it'd be great to kind of piggyback off each other. So I will definitely be in contact with some of their city leaders to see what they're doing with those issues and hopefully bring back some of that stuff here to Park City and help with our issues.
Yeah, I mean, they're not spending $40 million, though, on housing like we are, though, are they?
No, they have a pretty different system. They kind of do de-restrictions, and they make those who are building new homes build kind of a smaller home close to their home. That kind of forces them to rent that out to a local long-term, which we found really amazing. I'd kind of have to look into more detail into that. But, yeah, it was awesome because if you want to bring up your own home, The city kind of forces you to build a smaller home nearby so that they're your neighbors and you kind of have a local living with you in your neighborhood.
Well, that sounds like they're pretty large lots, though, if you're building two homes on a
It's not necessarily on the same lot. I think it's just around the same neighborhood as the ones I saw when we went to one of their parks. But they were building very similar home sizes to the one that we're building here on Main Street that are affordable housing, yeah.
Yeah. And then how about for you, Greg? Anything that kind of just like clicked? You know,
oh, I think the thing that clicked to me is that when your underlying value of a community, and lots of communities in the West since the advent of being able to work remotely is real estate values and appreciation is the driving industry. And that really creates more and more financial inequity between workers and then people who want to live there and they really aren't living from the fruits of the land and the labor that came from that land. That money's coming from other places, and so real estate prices just drive things to where it makes a nice experience for somebody who has the money, but basically people that are trying to be there and experience it and make a life there, the separation between income makes it so it's hard for families or 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds or whatever to participate, and I think it kind of dries up a community and makes it one of transition of people who want to ski or see the arts or eat some food at a fine table. But the underpinnings of a community, I think, are the voices of children and the voices of older people and the voices, you know, and they all get together. And I think that that's what makes, for me, a charming experience of living in a community.
Mm. Have they figured out any way, though, that that's how we maintain community? I mean, it sounds like by, you know, requiring people build houses for people to stay there, then that's a big step.
It's such a huge driver financially, and, you know, and incentives usually determine the patterns of what's going to happen. I think where we could weigh in with our experience is to go to some place like Montrose that we visited where we could say, okay, you're on the front end of this thing of retirees coming and others, and let's get in front of the affordable housing now. And there were some leaders there that have come there that I think that have been able to bring in high-end recreation facilities and others that and have been able to get things like that supported in a rural ranching farming community. And I was very impressed, but I think we could give them a bunch of insight, or at least our leaders, not me, by a long ways. But I was impressed with how they were able to communicate with the ranch community and show them what might be coming their way, and if they want to have a community, what should they do?
Yeah. So what, Montrose is about an hour and a half from the ski lifts?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
okay.
About 45 minutes from Telluride, and closest target, which is Crested Butte or Crusty Butt, as people call it locally. That's where they go.
Okay. Hey, I got to leave it there. But Emily, Greg, and Enrique, thank you for your insight. It's 8:46. Good morning. Well, the Park City Singers looking for recruits in the studio to tell us what's involved. I have Park City Singers Renee Monks Hall along with the Singers musical director Joe Demers. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is the time of year that you start recruiting. I know that you had a barbecue yesterday. Did you see a lot of new faces?
We saw a lot of our regular members that we were happy to see again after our hiatus for the summer.
And I did meet a couple of new ones that were going to be joining us, so that's good.
Okay, not too late, though, to jump in?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay, what's required if you wanted to be a Park City Singer?
Simply come to the very first rehearsal, which will be tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at Park City Community Church. And you will want to bring $45 for the season's membership. And we will provide you with the music packet and CDs for learning the music.
So no tryouts then, huh?
No tryouts.
That's correct.
How many singers are you looking for?
We look for about 60 if we can get that. And we're always interested in trying to add to our men's section. So if you're a tenor or bass, come on out and join us. And you do not need to necessarily have a trained voice. We have people in the group that have sung in college choirs, and they haven't sung for a long time, and they did something that they want to do, and it's a community choir. So we just encourage anybody who wants to come and do that with us.
Yeah. Do you kind of go out to the churches, though, and try and recruit from other community choirs?
Not directly to the choir. I do ask. We also try to do an outreach to the East Summit County as well, partly because we were, again, granted a rap tax grant, for which we're very thankful. And also I'd like to thank the public for supporting rap tax. But through that effort, we also want to be able to include the Eastern Summit County. So through one of our past members, I asked him to make contact with the churches that are in Eastern Summit County. Beyond that, many of our members come from choirs that are here in Park City. And so we do rely on members to send out a little flyer that I do on email. And we rely on them to put that into their church bulletins and various other means of contacting choir directors.
So what's the commitment then to be part of the holiday concerts?
Well, we have rehearsal every Tuesday night, so we encourage everybody to put aside that evening specifically for our rehearsals. And we rehearse right up to the concert time. And we have two concerts in December, on the 8th, Sunday, the 8th of December at 7 p.m. at the community church, and then Friday, the 13th at 7 p.m. at the community church, too.
Okay. And then the rehearsals go for what?
From 7 to 9.
All right. And how is it? I mean, there's just one of you. Do you break it up, though, so that each section gets to kind of learn their own pieces?
Well, with the help of the CDs, that helps a lot, because we have, I have some friends who record the soprano part, the alto part, and then I do the tenor and the bass. And so when I send out the CDs, they can hear their part predominantly with the other three parts in the background, so they can still hear how it fits together. And our literature this year is very familiar in many respects. We're singing some arrangements of Angels We Have Heard on High, The First Noel, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, The Coventry Carol, and then we have a few new ones. We have one, the Skyboat Song, which anybody who's watched
Outlanders
will recognize that theme, and then Auld Lang Syne, which is a new one that we've got this year, too. So there are some literature pieces that are very familiar, and then we've got a couple of classical ones like Achieved Is the Glorious Work by Haydn, and of course we wouldn't have a Christmas or a holiday concert without a Messiah piece, so we're singing Glory to God.
All right. So the soloists, I mean, you choose those as kind of the rehearsals go along?
Yes, and we find people that are interested, and then there are a couple of breakout groups that will sing No Time to Diet, which is a really fun one because, of course, at the holidays we all tend to indulge a little more. So it's a fun piece to make fun of our weaknesses in that area.
So I think, I mean, now at the end of it, you're probably a better singer, yeah?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And we have people that come back every year and they say, I never thought I would be able to do this, and this is so fun. And being a part of the community and then bringing their friends in to watch them perform is also really fun.
Okay. So again, if people are interested, show up tomorrow, 7 p.m., Park City Community Church, $45, and that's...
That's right. And actually, if they would like to come a little bit earlier so we can...
Register,
and that way we can start right at 7.
Okay.
Also, I'd like to mention that they can also go to our website or our Facebook page, and all this information is there so they can review in case they didn't have a pencil ready as we were speaking. So that website would be parkcitysingers.org, and the Facebook page is Facebook Park City Singers. So
okay,
they can check out either of those locations as well.
All right. I'm a big fan. Looking forward to this year's concerts. Thanks.
Great.
All right.
Thank you, Leslie.
Joe Demers and Renee Moxhall with Park City Singers. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:53 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher in the studio now with an update of what's happening at the Park City Education Foundation. Executive Director Abby McNulty. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
You wanted to give me an update with regard to the EVA. That's the Elementary Visual Arts Program.
Yes. So every month we like to talk about one of the programs the Ed Foundation supports in Park City schools. And this month I wanted to talk about EVA, Elementary Visual Arts. It's a partnership with the Education Foundation and the Kimball Arts Center. It started about 7 years ago in response to the legislature many, many years ago cutting elementary art from the budget. And so this was a community solution to make sure that our youngest kids have the opportunity to be creative and to have art in the classrooms.
Okay, so how does it work? You bring in specialists?
Yeah, so we fund three specialists. So it's at three of the four elementary schools. It's at Trailside, McPolin, and Parley's. Jeremy Ranch has a very robust volunteer program. And so we bring in their specialists at each one of those elementary schools, and they teach art lessons. It's a little different at every school. At Parley's, it's once a week. At McPolin, it's twice a month. And at Trailside, it's once a month. And the art lessons are created by the Kimball Art Center. For example, this month's lesson is Juan Miró. And they learn a little bit of the history of the artist, the context of which they were an artist, and then the kids create their own artwork.
So if pre-K through grade 5?
Yes.
All right,
yes.
So they come different days then for each of the classes, or they do it all in one day?
Oh, no, they do it like over the course of 2 weeks, basically. Yeah, so all of, you know, kindergarten will go on Monday, all of first grade will go on Tuesday, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so it's a kind of a full-time job then for the specialist.
It feels like a full-time job for the specialist, 100%.
Let's see, you're also in the midst of the foundation's annual Back to School Parent Appeal fundraising campaign. How's that going?
It's going great. So every year in the fall, we ask parents to make a contribution to support education in Park City. All the donations that are given to our to the Ed Foundation stay here to support programs. It's about $1.5 million every year that we fund. And we raise the money each and every year, and we're dependent on parents making contributions to ensure that those funds exist for our schools.
Yeah. So why is that commitment so important to what you do?
Great question. First of all, Utah is the lowest funded education system in the country. We frequently hear about that. And secondly, income tax is what is designated to support education in our state. And the majority of the income tax collected here in Park City is redistributed to fund other districts around the state.
Yeah. So as part of that whole tax reform conversation
yes.
that we're having, they're talking mm-hmm. about maybe amending the constitutional amendment that allows for that income tax to go towards
other
public
things.
Education.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you guys going to take a stand on that or?
Well, I would say we're still learning about it. I saw that Action Utah is hosting an event with all five legislators on Thursday, and I would very much encourage people to go. The problem is, in my mind, and this is just me, Abby McNulty, citizen and parent, is that our state is already underfunding education. And there is a constitutional amendment that requires income tax to support education. And if they remove that, I worry that there will be an opportunity to continue to underfund education.
Yeah. And you say that, but I mean, our property tax notices that we just got show that most of the money collected goes towards public and state education. So why is it that you need more?
Yeah. So property taxes are do fund our local education. We are one of the only school districts in the country that's largely funded on its own. Most school districts have support from state and federal funds. We're largely 100% locally funded. The other thing is parents have high expectations and our students have really diverse needs. And so if you want your child to be able to have additional programs in their classroom beyond the basic, and if we're looking at basic here in our state, that doesn't include, for example, elementary art, nor does it include science, full-day kindergarten, preschool. I mean, some of the things that we consider to be basic offering of education, then we ask the community to step up to provide additional resources.
Yeah. So are we talking about things that our children really need, or are these really just wish list items?
As a parent of two, I don't think they're wishlist items. I think it's about providing a robust education to educate the whole child from preschool to high school.
All right. So how's that campaign work? Are you still doing like the phone calls? Or?
Yes. So we ask parents to give at the beginning of the year with registration. And then we do our Beat the Call campaign, which is coming up, starts September 23rd. And then if we if you haven't made a contribution yet to support students, and it's really whatever you are able to afford, then we call you. We have a team of students that make phone calls.
You'd like to have just something.
Yes.
Whatever that amount. It may not be a dollar a day, but just.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. An effort. Yeah. What's the percentage, do you think, of people?
It's 70%, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention? Did you guys do your Red Gala yet?
We did it on Saturday, and it was great. It was the best year we've ever had. We're still tallying the numbers, but it was a really wonderful, great celebration of our students and teachers.
Okay. So does that go just right again into the pot for
student
programs?
It goes into the pot for student programs, and that's because we have to raise $1.5 million each year for programs.
Okay. Yep. Anything else you want to mention?
Nope. Thank you for having me today.
All right. Thank you, Abby. It's Abby McNulty, Executive Director of the Park City Education Foundation.